Hello, and welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans. I'm David Bailey, and over the past nearly 12 years, this podcast has taken on many forms, from interviews and audio diaries to cultural snapshots and expat reflections. You might notice some different podcast names mentioned along the way, but it's all part of the same journey, one that explores life, people, and stories from this fascinating region I now call home. If you're enjoying the listen, I'd love it if you left a quick review or rating wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps others discover the show. And if something in the episode sparks your interest or curiosity, why not drop me a message? I always enjoy hearing from listeners. I always reply.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pacinovic Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans, the podcast that takes you on a captivating journey into the heart of Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. Each episode, we delve into the rich history, vibrant culture, and hidden gems of this beautiful country. Through engaging conversations and personal anecdotes, we aim to bridge the gap between the Balkans and the rest of the world. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired, entertained, and connected.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
You're listening to the Living in Bosnia and Herzegovina podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Living in Bosnia and Herzegovina podcast, a podcast that tells stories from this much misunderstood country. In today's episode, we'll be finding out more about folklore and in particular, traditional dancing. Back in 2019, I became aware of a young lady from South Holland who had been dancing with a folklore ensemble in the nearby city of Banja Luka. She was, at that time, starting to make a film about Bosnian folk dancing because she felt that these traditions might be starting to disappear and she wanted to preserve that experience for future generations. So, in the COVID world of early 2021, I've caught up with Afi Derksen to find out more.
You're listening to the Living in Bosnia and Herzegovina podcast.
Afi, you're in the Netherlands. I'm here in Bosnia and Herzegovina. I bumped into you quite randomly on the internet, and I thought, what an amazing story. So we've never really met in real life. So if we did, my first question to you would be, who is Afi?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm very jealous because you are there. I miss it so much to be in Bosnia. But I'm Afi. I'm a Dutch woman, and there is no genetical link with the former of Yugoslavia. But for me, it's something I grew up with. So it was in our home. We always listened to Balkan music. And well, first your question, who is Afi? I'm a lot of things. I'm a nurse and I'm making a dust from my heart. I'm not a filmmaker. So it's just something that I wanted to do. important to preserve what we can find now.
I read a little bit about you, and you said that your parents, both from the Netherlands, were into folklore themselves, but they met not in the Netherlands, I understand, but somewhere close to here as well.
Yeah, it's true. They met in Hungary. My dad is a musician. He always was. And he loved the music from the Balkan. It was just that feeling and the music and the songs. So he would travel to the Balkan to learn from the musicians there. And my mother was a folk dancer. And in that years, I'm talking about 70s or the 80s, I don't know, it was very popular in Holland to do folk dancing. So there were courses, and she went to a course in Hungary. There was just like a folk festival. And my dad also was traveling there, and he came to play, and she came to dance, and then they met, like two Dutch people in one folk festival in Hungary. So it's funny. Yeah.
What made you want to come to the Balkans, and in particular Bosnia and Herzegovina? Today, for example, we're talking about the wonders of the country, and yet I was just before talking to you dropping in on a seminar to try and encourage tourism and to try and encourage visitors to come here. And it's been an uphill struggle, always is and always has been an uphill struggle. What made you want to come to this country, this very misunderstood country in Southeast Europe?
Well, in the first place, I had the culture in my heart, you know, the songs, and I never was interested. Well, I was interested, but I never cared about the war stories, because I think that's a big problem. People still think, like, is it safe going to Bosnia or Serbia or because of the war? But I think for me, it's the people that I come for. They are so open and loving, and particular Bosnian people, because I think in history they were always the ones in the middle, you know, they were always the ones that people came to attack, or how do you say it? And I think they are more vulnerable, I guess. They are more open. They are more... I don't know, warm. They are just, you feel at home. When you come there, it's just a second home, and they embrace you. And even after all those crazy things that happened in that country with all those ethnic groups, they are just still open. And it's, and beside that, when people come, maybe the first thing they need to know, it's a beautiful country, it's beautiful nature, it's beautiful, the food is really, I see you are very lucky, you can eat a lot of that. It's just, but when they are really in Bosnia, they can feel the love for each other and for their nature and for their country and their traditions. I don't know, it's... Is that a good answer?
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. So when did you first come to the country? How long did you stay? And where did you stay? Because I don't think that you were staying in a hotel, right?
Well, the first time I did, I went, like my mother, on dance courses and that were organized from the Netherlands, to learn dances from, my first dance week was in Serbia. And it was in, not so long ago, it was 2013. It was my first time I went to Serbia. And then on years later, every year I went to a dance course because I fell in love. I just wanted to go back. And it was only 2016. I went to Bosnia for a dance course. And because my teacher in the Netherlands, he went to Bosnia like 30 years ago to dance with the folk dance group in Banja Luka, because they visited the Netherlands on the folk festival in the Netherlands. And yeah, he just stepped in with them in the bus and drive to Bosnia, and there danced on the summers. And so he knew the group, and we went with him to the group to learn Bosnian dances. But what I just said, the Bosnian people are even more warming, even more, I don't know, it even felt more home. Like my first time in Serbia, this was just more my home. And I asked at the folk ensemble, can I join for a couple months? It's my dream to dance on stage with the people where the dances come from, you know, not only with Dutch people when we try to make the costumes and look like we're from Bosnia or whatever, but just with the people being on stage and dancing with them. So they say, okay. They didn't think I was seriously, because in 2017, I planned to be there for 3 months and to dance with them. And they still thought, like, that's a weird question. Why would a Dutch girl want to dance with us 3 months in an ensemble? But I did. I just came, and I had like a little flat something I rent, and I was dancing three times a week. And after those 3 months of beautiful adventures, I stood on stage with them on the, how you say, last concert of the year in December. It's like a big concert. So that was my main experience. After that, I couldn't stop going there. Like the Maslisha family, that's the ensemble in Banja Luka, it's just my second family. I miss them, and I miss Banja Luka and the environment and the people I met in the villages. It's just, yeah, it became more and more and more.
For those that don't know, the Maslisha dance group is named after the partisan war hero, I believe, Veselin Maslisha. I've seen a lot of folklore in the time that I've been here. And I, to be honest with you, I am fascinated about it. And I'm going to have one particular technical question to ask you. Well, maybe not a technical question, but we'll do that a little later on. Going up to a dance group and saying, can I join and can I take part? I know things are changing in the country rapidly at the moment, and they've certainly changed in Banja Luka since I arrived. You can get around now using English. When I first came here, the waiters deliberately gave me a Cyrillic menu. I mean, come on. I like their sense of humour. How was the language problem for you? English is your second language. Now you want to try and do something that requires technical ability, coordination, and all the other things. And you're trying to do this in another language. How difficult was it to communicate with the dance group?
Well, I love the language, so I was very open to learn it. But it's a very hard language. I think you experienced that too. It's just a hard language. Well, for the dance classes, it was okay because I could count to 10, and I learned with time what kind of steps or dances meant in their language. But a lot of people cannot speak English or are too shy to speak English. So in the dance group, it was sometimes hard because they just were talking Bosnian with each other. But when I look back, I'm happy that it was like that, because I could learn it faster than I had to Sometimes it was funny because it was like a dance class. You had two groups. One group has to dance the choreography and the other group has to wait. And then this choreographer, he was just pointing out people like, you have to stay and you have to leave. And a lot of times I was just standing there like, oh, I have to stay. And it was, no, Evie, you have to leave now. Oh. Or it was the other way around. I was already gone. And then the choreographer came, Evie, I need you. Yeah, so sometimes it was funny. But I think it's good to be able to learn when people, and as you say, like in a restaurant, it's still sometimes very difficult.
You know, when you arrived in Banja Luka, or even Serbia when you started, had you ever done any Balkan dances before you arrived, or was it that much of a culture shock that it was, wow, here I go?
No, I grew up with it, because in the Netherlands, it maybe sounds a little weird, but in the Netherlands, we really have like this folk dance culture where people dance from other countries. So, and a lot of the dances are from the Balkan. I don't know why that happened, but it was like very popular. And maybe it's because it's very typical for our Dutch people that we don't like our traditional dances, so we want to dance other dances from other countries. Yeah, and my dad was a teacher or was musician who played in folk dance classes on a dance academy in the Netherlands. Now they don't have international dancing anymore, but in that time, you had on a dance academy, you had also the international dances, like the folk dances. And the woman who was teaching that was Yvonne Despotovic, and she was married, of course, with Siga Despotovic. And I don't know, I grew up with that. She was just someone we met a lot in our house. And
I'm going to talk about clothing and everything a little later on, because we'll be talking quite a bit about your film, which I think is going to be an amazing thing. You were based in Banja Luka. You must have travelled quite a bit while you were here. And the reason I'm asking this now is because Tamara, my wife, used to dance with another Banja Luka group, and she talks fondly about those times. And in fact, it took me a long time to get over the embarrassment of walking through a street and people would be dancing kolo, and the next minute I'd look around and where had she gone, and there she is doing it. So did you travel a lot? Did you see, I mean, because Bosnia-Herzegovina has got all these different little areas in it and they have different costumes for every village, it seems to me. Maybe that's a little bit too strong. And they all have variations on a theme. Did you experience that while you were here?
Yeah, a lot. Well, I know it from like the did she dance in Čajevac, or you don't know?
Yeah, Čajevac, yeah.
Well, you know, I know it from the stage. How do you say it? Like the art way to dance, because like you have glamoč, so this is the costume of glamoč. You know, in the art-styled way to dance folk dances, you see that the difference is very clear. But I also meet people in the mountain villages. They had some costumes from their great grandmother who made them, and I had the opportunity to visit them and to see the clothing. It was really special because it was like the original state, and you have a lot of different patterns and a lot of different embroidery, colors. Some have a yelek, some don't, some have coins. Every village's own identity, but not only in costumes, also in styled how they dance or which steps, and everything was different. Well, it's obviously it's you had all those mountain villages. They couldn't reach each other. Like 100 years ago, it was difficult to have this big connection like we have now. So it was really an own identity. Yeah, thank you.
When you were talking about different costumes, one of the I'm not an expert in this, but I'm always quite amazed. There's a dance group in the nearest town to us of Lakatashi, where the guys have like white fur hats, and
I think they dance plush.
Anyway, they have these big white hats, furry hats, which, yes, I think look amazing, but it has that identity. And yet there's others that just have a very flat cap, like in Herzegovina. And I'm going to talk about flat caps. I'm going to talk about dancing without music, because you did mention glamoch. That must be quite amazing. Are they the only people that dance without music?
No. No, there are a lot of regions that have that, because you have to imagine, like, this whole state, not only Bosnia, but this whole Yugoslavia, was a part of the Ottoman's empire, huh? Yeah, it was the right word. Yeah, I'm sorry, it was too long that I spoke in English. But they bring a lot of things with them. Not only in clothes, like the scarves, sometimes you can say it's from the Ottomans or some music instruments, but also I think it was forbidden to play music or to play instruments, something like that. And that's why people started to make their own noise and their own singing. So glamoch is not the only one. If you talk about Bosnia, you also have the Zmijanje region. Maybe you know it from the costumes with the blue vase, with the blue...
Yeah. I find it amazing. Zmijanje from the Manjača.
Yeah. And there they also have this dances without music.
I never knew that. Thank you for that, because I'm going to go down and see that. When you see them dancing without music, would you say that's the purest form of dance, if you can express yourself just with your feet and with your voice and dance at the same time?
It's a beautiful question. You feel it like that, David, that it's the purest?
Yeah, I mean, to me, as somebody that has no knowledge of this, people dance to the music. I find the music quite invocative, but they're dancing their steps. But a lot of the time, when I first came here, I thought, I wonder what it would be like if there was never any music. And I just shook my head and said, but that's never going to happen. And then one day I bumped into the glamoch kokolo, and I just thought, this is so entertaining. And there's not, it's just voice and feet, isn't it, basically?
Yeah, it is. And they have the bells, right? That it's a funny fact that it's when you step, the bells are like 1 second later or something like that. So it's very hard to feel the same rhythm, but that's something else. Well, I don't know if it's the basic, because you also have like instruments that exist for years. You have like the flutes, like 100 years ago, they had shepherds who needed the flutes to communicate or to waste time. But it was like the kaval, it's the long flute. I think it exists for a long time. And also the guzle, it was an instrument that used by poets, so they could tell stories. So there are a lot of things that are very pure, I think. And mostly what you see on stage with those folk ensembles is like art, because it has to be interesting for people people who don't deal with it. So it's based on the authentic patterns, but it's made more interesting.
Your experience here I feel that being in Bosnia and Herzegovina, I want to tell the story about the country. You've gone a massive step further by saying, well, I'm going to tell my story, I'm going to make a film. Evie, I mean, making a film is a major undertaking. Why did you decide to go that huge step and make a film? This film, I mean, making a podcast takes me, what, I don't know, 2 days at the most. To make a weekly vlog about life in Bosnia and Herzegovina, I don't know, would take me about, I don't know, 6 hours of editing. Your film has been a major undertaking, a lot longer than a few minutes and a few hours. Why did you decide to jump into this?
Before I answer that, David, it's very hard job, I think, to be able to show the world the beautiful way of living in Bosnia and Herzegovina, because you are doing a great job. Why? Because a lot of people were sharing their worries about the future. Like in Holland, we don't have a lot of cultural heritage anymore because we didn't care enough, I think. And this folklore is so alive in former Yugoslavia, but also because of the world that is changing and young people are moving from the country. A lot of people think that in the future it will not exist anymore. And also in the villages, young people don't live anymore. And the people who are living there, they have like old costumes, but they want to carry it with them in their grave. So it disappears, you know, also on that side. And a lot of people had thought that young people are not interested in the old crafts, like making the instruments or playing the instruments or even dancing, because a lot of other activities are popular, like football or I don't know, whatever. So I was like, my God, this is something so beautiful. And for me, it's so meaningful. And maybe I just make a film about it to preserve it. Like, then we have something that the film is the product to preserve it. Like, maybe things will vanish, like costumes will be in graves, but now I can make a movie about it, so they are on film, so we can see it and the rest of the world can see it, because there are like two things. One, that things can be preserved, like the things that I found now and maybe are not there in 10 years, and to show it to the world, like to show the world how beautiful this part of Europe is, and not only of the war story, but just this part is so beautiful and people don't know about. So yeah, and it was particularly because I was in a mountain village of Imljani. It was high up in the mountains. I was with a friend there who was a doctor for animals. So we went there up in the mountains, and there was a couple, a woman and a man, and they had a very old costume from her great-grandmother or something. And we were there and we get food.
They always feed you here. I mean, it is death by food, isn't it?
Yeah, and it was like fresh cheese and bread, and the man was so happy to see someone. So I was making pictures of him with his sheep, and I got that costume. The woman put it on me. Oh, it was so special. And then she told me that she wanted to put it in the grave. And it was one of the rare costumes that was complete. You know, you have original parts, but this one was complete, like the yelek and I was sure now I need to make a film about it, because this one, everyone has to see it before it's too late. So I just started. I don't know. I'm not a filmmaker. I just put an a message on some site for filmmakers and for producers, and I just asked, like, I don't have a budget, but who wants to make a film with me? And I had like 20 or 25 reactions between people. It was like crazy. And some people, they saw it as a job, you know, they wanted money for it, but I didn't had a budget. So there was a who really wanted to help me. She was the best. She I think together we made this film. She was the director. She was helping me with the script, and the rest I did myself. My father was a musician, but also an sound technic man. I think that's a good word. Yeah, and so he said, I will do the sound. I have the products. We had cameras we could use. I had a crowdfund. People were like anxious, so they put everything. They gave me a lot. I'm so thankful. And the rest I did myself, and I did all the interviews. I don't know where it came from. It was just I wanted to make it.
When is it due out? That's it. That's a question that I've got, because I'm dying to see it. When do you think it will be released to the public?
That's a very good question, David. Yeah, because I wanted to have the premiere like last year in September, but you know, of COVID, it's not possible, and I'm not even I cannot even travel to Bosnia or Serbia. So I hope. I contacted Nemanja from Maslisha. We think like maybe May or June that I can come to do the premiere, because it's old. It's their culture. And I want to have the first premiere in Banja Luka, because it's like a gift for them. And it's not something I need to do in Holland. Well, maybe later, but the first premiere, I want to do it with the people there. So I hope it will be in May or June. But the situation, I don't know how it's in Bosnia, but it's very difficult here. We are still in a very sharp lockdown.
Efi, finally, one of the things that you said that I felt was quite sad, and now that you've been here, in 50 years' time, you know, you said your worry was that in 50 years' time, this might not be like it is today. And you mentioned about young people leaving villages. I know that is happening every day. Everybody thinks it's like the city is paved with gold. The grass is greener in the other field, etc., etc. What do you really think in your heart? Will folklore still be as strong as it is now? Or do you really think that we could be seeing the end of it?
Well, my first thought when I made the film was like, oh my God, it's going to die. But I learned from all the people that I interviewed and all the things that I saw, it's like a double answer. First, I think the folklore as we know it today, and the authentic folklore as the people were still practicing in when they were working in the fields or on Slava or other special occasions, I think that maybe will be that in 50 years maybe there is nothing left from that. But I also learned folklore is like changing with us. If you tell me like what is folklore, I still cannot answer it, because I'm talking about authentic folklore, and then we talk about 100 years ago. But what was 200 years ago or 1,000 years ago, we really don't know what kind of folklore there was in that time. So it's not a hard conclusion that we can take, like this is not going to exist anymore, because it's changing. So what we are doing today will be the folklore for the future. So it's changing. That's what's happening. And my hope in my heart is that we still can enjoy these old melodies and these old dances and that feeling from the heart in those people. but maybe they make new beautiful melodies. You know, it's just like everything in life. Things change all the time. Maybe it's sad and maybe it's a beautiful answer. I'm not sure yet. I don't know yet.
Efi Derksen there, talking about Bosnian folklore. The connection broke up a bit during our chat, but I'm sure you'll agree with me that Efi gave some fascinating insights into how a foreigner sees the traditions here in Bosnia and Herzegovina. That's it for this episode. And if you like the podcast, please do give us a thumbs up wherever you can. Join our feed through your podcatcher of choice and leave a review. It all adds up to making this podcast successful. Until the next episode, please do stay safe in these challenging times. And that's a wrap for this podcast. We hope you've enjoyed finding out a little more about both Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. If you've enjoyed this journey as much as we enjoy bringing it to you, please take a moment to leave us a review and subscribe to our podcast. Your feedback helps us tremendously and makes a huge difference. Thank you once again for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pacinovic Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans. So that's it for this one. Thanks for keeping me company. If you enjoyed the episode, maybe share it with a friend who might like it too. And if you've got thoughts, questions, or just want to say hello, you can always reach out. Also, if you'd like to support the podcast and help me keep telling these stories, you can drop a little tip via Buy Me a Coffee. The link is in the show notes. Even a euro or two makes a big difference. So that's it then. Take care, and I'll catch you in the next episode.